Sudan is now the biggest humanitarian crisis ever.
The United Nations has said more than 30 million people are in need of aid, and some 12 million have fled their homes.
What started as citizens seeking freedom has become a state at risk of collapse.
The risk of state failure is massive. The longer this goes on, the more fragmented Sudanese society becomes.
Today is Friday, December 13th, and this is The Issue from VOA.
Hi, everyone. I'm Lori London.
And I'm Scott Walterman.
Our calls for humanitarian access to conflict hotspots in Sudan have never been more critical.
Sudan has become the largest humanitarian crisis ever recorded, the largest displacement crisis in the world, and is heading toward one of the world's worst famines in decades.
The country's collapse is accelerating as a brutal civil war fueled by outside powers devastates the lives of civilians. Just this week, at least 127 people, mostly civilians, were killed in Sudan by barrel bombs and shelling from the warring sides. We hear more now from Reuters correspondent Angela Johnston.
More than 100 people were killed in Sudan when 8 barrel bombs hit a market in North Darfur on Monday, according to pro-democracy and human rights groups. One activist said that while there are typically a few soldiers in the market in town, most of those present were civilians, and that some bodies were too charred or mutilated to identify. The army has frequently targeted towns in North Darfur with airstrikes as it fights the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces, or RSF, for control of the state capital. The army denied responsibility for the attack on the market, but insisted it had the right to target any location used by the RSF for military purposes. The RSF did not immediately respond to a request for comment. The conflict has been turning increasingly bloody as ceasefire efforts have stalled and crises elsewhere have dominated world attention. On Tuesday, the RSF aimed heavy artillery fire at an army-controlled sector of Omdurman, residents said. The group emergency lawyers said at least 20 people were killed, while the state government said 65 people died. At the Zamzam camp for displaced people in North Darfur, where famine has been declared, 7 people were killed in shelling on Tuesday, according to one official. Both sides have targeted densely populated civilian areas in the 20-month-old war. The army has stepped up airstrikes in the half of the country that the RSF controls, while the RSF has staged raids on villages and intense artillery strikes.
That was Reuters correspondent Angela Johnston reporting. Far from working toward a diplomatic resolution, leaders of both factions seem to believe that continued fighting best serves their interests, putting Sudan on a course for a devastating humanitarian collapse in 2025, Lori.
And you know, Scott, it's interesting how this news cycle goes where, you know, we have this crisis and then Ukraine and then Gaza and now Syria and all of those horrible situations around the world that are happening. This one seems to get overshadowed, and it's actually becoming the worst as far as humanitarian.
Yeah,
this project.
Let's go deeper into this. It's really you're absolutely right. You pinpointed it. It is just being out of the world's focus. So joining us is Michelle Gavin. She's a senior fellow for Africa Policy Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations.
Thanks for taking the time to speak with us about this somewhat overlooked but major issue. We heard this week from the International Rescue Committee that the humanitarian crisis in Sudan is the largest since records began. And the UN has said more than 30 million people are in need of aid. That is a lot of human beings.
This has been, it's both a frustrating conflict because in many ways it's senseless. Neither side has got the military capacity to win. It's frustrating because it's fueled by external powers who are not having to deal with the consequences of the human suffering. But it's also frustrating because it seems forever to be forgotten, even though it is, in fact, the world's worst humanitarian crisis. And it's a situation in which the armed conflict has been characterized by atrocities, but also by denial of humanitarian access on a massive scale. So people are starving to death.
Some people believe that the Sudan is at risk of breaking apart or becoming a failed state. Do you agree with that assessment?
I 100% agree that the risk of state failure is massive. The longer this goes on, the more fragmented Sudanese society becomes, as different identity groups, different regional groups try to protect themselves. And so any peace negotiation then gets more complicated because you have a whole lot of different actors at the table. And, you know, for a lot of Sudanese people, they would say their state has failed. For many, many Sudanese people right now, there is no authority looking out for their interests. There's a tremendous amount of very laudable work being done at the community level of, you know, civilians helping civilians, but no one is prioritizing civilian protection here, and the state is basically absent for an awful lot of Sudanese.
So the war erupted in April of 2023. Can you talk about why this happened? What led to this?
Sure. So Sudan was governed for a very long time by a pretty brutal authoritarian regime, and that regime had both its regular armed forces and a set of paramilitary forces that it used to exert control and to keep each other off balance to some degree, right, to try to prevent a coup. Then in 2020, the Sudanese people rose up and demanded democratic governance. They wanted to oust that regime. And you had this fragile period of sort of civilian military transitional government that was supposed to be driving toward an all civilian government selected by the people. But in that transitional period, the jockeying for power between the formal army and this paramilitary group, the RSF, eventually spilled over into outright conflict. So it's two elements of the former regime, the one that was decisively rejected by the Sudanese people, fighting for control.
You also mentioned earlier there are external actors in this, among them Russia, who's selling arms and taking gold. And it is in their interest, they believe, to keep the war going, as it is with some of the other groups, including some Islamist groups inside Sudan, no?
No, that's absolutely right. There are hardline Islamists allied with the Sudanese armed forces. That Russia has got relationships on both sides of this conflict. But there are other entities, United Arab Emirates, supplying the RSF, which is a force perhaps best known for committing atrocities. And so there are a lot of different international actors pursuing interests that really, in many ways, have nothing to do with Sudan. Perhaps it's a proxy competition with someone else, or it's about aspirations eventually, in the case of Russia and the armed forces, to eventually have some kind of presence on the Red Sea. But it's there has been an absence of accountability, both for those in Sudan committing atrocities, denying people humanitarian aid, and those outside who are fueling this conflict.
So circling back to the beginning of where we started, that this is considered the worst humanitarian crisis ever recorded. What you mentioned earlier that, you know, millions of people are at risk of starving to death. What else can you tell us about what is happening on the ground with civilians?
Well, you know, millions have been displaced, so they remain within Sudan's borders, but they've had to flee their homes, and we're talking about 12 million people. There has been a tremendous amount of sexual violence. Healthcare facilities have been targeted in this war, so the deliberate destruction of hospitals and clinics, and as humanitarians will tell you, kind of a food security emergency is the sort of apex of humanitarian disaster. So you can pretty much bet when people are starving to death, you can pretty much bet they don't have access to basic sanitation. They don't have access to healthcare. That's the kind of last straw of basic human needs not being met. And that is where some, 30 million people are in need of assistance. A large chunk of those are in this emergency stage.
They really got blown out of the news when the Israeli-Hamas conflict started. Why do you think it is that we pay such little attention to Sudan?
I have been asking myself this question several times a day for quite a while now. I think part of it is that among the belligerents, there are no clear good guys, right? Both sides are unpopular with the Sudanese people, and both sides have committed atrocities. So that's perhaps part of it. I also think that there's a degree to which a fairly racist assumption that violence is some kind of natural state in parts of the African continent is responsible for at least a portion of the neglect. And Sudan's own history, right, of conflict and crisis can inform that and make people think, isn't Sudan always in turmoil? Which is such a shame, because Sudan was such an exciting story of people, very brave civilians, risking everything to try and take their country in a different direction. I don't totally understand why it's not getting more attention, because there certainly are consequences and spillover effects that will have a real impact on the interests of many, many societies, not just Sudan's neighbors.
Turkey says it wants to step in to try to resolve disputes between Sudan and the United Arab Emirates, as you mentioned. What can they do, or any other nation? Is what needs to happen and to have this thing end and have this crisis turn around? Is there any resolution that makes sense at this point?
Well, since neither side is strong enough to defeat the other, there should be a reasonable incentive to come to the table. So what needs to happen, I do think it's more accountability and exposure and risk for the entities that continue to fuel this conflict with weapons and with money. And then there needs to be a comprehensive discussion of what kind of security guarantees all parties here need to see to take their foot off the gas, as it were, in terms of fueling this conflict. So if some of these entities are providing these weapons because they believe that if they don't, an antagonist will gain some kind of important strategic advantage, then okay, let's figure out how to address that security concern. So there needs to be a really comprehensive dialogue to try and address core concerns, so that all the fuel that keeps getting poured on this fire is no longer forthcoming.
The United Nations has tried to get them to the table and been unsuccessful. Do you think that that's even possible to bring the two to the table?
Well, I think, again, I think it's about more than just the two belligerents within Sudan. It's about their backers and sponsors. Yeah, I do think it's possible, but it requires a degree of focus and will and willingness to accept the costs and consequences of pressuring some other entities that, you know, some of those costs are significant. I don't have a lot of hope that the UN is going to be the most effective mediating entity, just because the UN is having trouble with efficacy across the board these days because of, you know, overall geopolitical tension.
All right. Michelle, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us about this and bring this to light.
Thank you so much for covering it. Thank you.
Michelle Gavin, a senior fellow for Africa Policy Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations.
You know, you can really tell this is a policy analyst, and yet you can tell by the tone of the conversation that there's just such a level of concern and sort of an unknowing on what is going to happen to these real human beings that are suffering terribly and no end in sight.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? And it's mostly women and children who are carrying the brunt of the suffering. An unimaginable number of people have left their homes because of this conflict, a conflict which has no end in sight, which cannot be won by either side, being fueled by outside parties who are simply profiting from it.
You know, all the humanitarian aid organizations out there that are trying to help these people and trying to help people in Gaza, it's overwhelming. The need across the world, really, and the places that the need is the most, that these aid organizations, while stretched thin, aren't even able to get in to do the work that they could be doing to help. Sad.
This has been The Issue from the Voice of America.
On behalf of all of us here at VOA, we thank you so much for joining us.
Follow The Issue on X, on Blue Sky, and on Facebook at VOA, The Issue, all one word. And for news 24/7, go to our website. That's voanews.com.
In Washington, I'm Lori London.
And I'm Scott Walterman.
We'll talk to you next week.